CityTalk 105.9 official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm. Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. CityTalk 105.9.
Hello and welcome to City Talk's Business with me, Frank McKenna. I'm the chairman of the Independent Private Sector Lobby Group and Business Networking Club Downtown Liverpool in Business. And every Sunday we look at issues affecting Liverpool and the wider Northwest region. This week I'm looking at Liverpool's knowledge economy and its visitor economy with two men who have both played their part in improving the city in these important sectors. In the studio today, I'm joined by Dave Piccolinghi from Sound City and Dr. Neil Murray, the Chief Executive of Redx Pharma. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to see you. Now, our listeners will be anticipating lots of commentary on the mayoral election and the FA Cup final, but unfortunately we've had to record the programme early this week, so we're not going to be able to talk about the results of those things. We can, though. We will talk about Chelsea's fabulous victory that I'm anticipating on Saturday. Fed up going to Wembley, Dave. Fed up going to Wembley. The mayoral election, I think, you know, barring an absolute disaster, Joe Anderson will by now be mayor of the city. But whoever the personality is, what are we hoping for? What are we expecting a Liverpool City mayor to bring that is perhaps different to a city leader? Dave?
Well, I think you said it. Just under the first word, when you use personality in the line, really. And I think what we want, you know, what I think we want, you know, with what we do, marketing festivals, marketing events, it's really about selling a perception of something, really. And I think if it's, you know, Joe Anderson, you know, Liverpool running through his veins, I think he's going to be a great spokesperson for the city, really, and making that a kind of attack brand for Liverpool really, really work, not just on a kind of regional, on a national level, but on an international level, really. And so I hope that in the same way as, you know, if you look historically about some of the great mayors in the last 20 years that's come through places like New York, for example. And dare I say it, you know, even Boris and the stuff that he's done down in London, really, you know, much as it pains me to say it, really, since he's been there, you know, I think Ken started that legacy, but certainly Boris has picked up that mantle in many good ways, certainly for the brand of London and the kind of the positive impact that's had on a kind of world stage. And so I would hope that, you know, it's bound to be Joe, picks up that mantle, you know, and looks at those things and takes that passion that he has for the city, really, and really builds us on the world stage in where we're meant to be, really, you know.
I think the one thing that I'd hope is that word, or that phrase you've just used there, Dave, you know, the international stage, the international level. Mm-hmm. And I hope that what we enable the mayor to do is actually get out of the city and not be perhaps as parochial as sometimes the politics in Liverpool appears to be. So let him get on with the strategic stuff, get out to international cities, start to make and build important links with those international trade centres that we require if we're to grow. Now, Neil, you know, as somebody who is out of the city, but obviously very involved in Liverpool, how do you see Liverpool as a place? Do you think that it has that international feel, that international perspective?
I think it's something that's growing. I'd have to say, I mean, I've been involved in Liverpool for about the last 3 years or so, and I've seen it growing in that time. I was pleasantly surprised. My wife's from the world, so, you know, I know a little bit about the area, but I was pleasantly surprised when I came here 3 years ago and was starting to spend a lot of time here at just how progressive the city was. And going back to the mayoral election, one of the things that is key is that it's about, as you say, it's about presenting that brand and making sure that people understand that Liverpool's about more than the Beatles and about more than football. You know, and you take things like the Global Entrepreneurship Congress that was here in March was a terrific event. And you know, with truly global coverage and attendance, and to be able to, you know, when you see the sequence of cities that had hosted that event, to see Liverpool ranked alongside the other great cities, you know, like Shanghai and Dubai and Rio
it's
de Janeiro.
Rio, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, to see it in that kind of sequence is where the city needs to be positioning itself going forwards, if it's going to be successful with all the regeneration efforts that are going on.
Mm. Do you think, Dave, that as a city, we sometimes don't allow our politicians the amount of freedom that they require? I mean, I think Neil's just made a great point there about the Global Entrepreneurship Congress, because as much of a success as it was, similarly with the Giants coming to the city a few weeks ago, we always seem to have a number of people in Liverpool, probably the same people and probably the vociferous minority, mm-hmm. but they've always got a downer on whatever we're doing. So it's like, oh, what are we spending money on that for? Why are we going to Shanghai? Why do we want to put Giants on? What's that all about? We need to just be a bit more optimistic and perhaps a bit more confident that we can invest and get something back.
No, I think you're right. And I think that's part of the past, really. I think we're learning to ignore those voices. And I think those people in the right positions of power certainly ignoring those voices. I mean, you heard that. I mean, I think the Giants is a good example because it's a recent example. You know, I think the media plays a part in it as well, because certainly the media were on the morning of the Giants, really. If you go back and listen to some of the news reports, I was coming into town on that morning, and certainly, you know, most of the radio stations were broadcasting stuff about the kind of negative aspect of it, really. So they were almost building it up to let it fall, really. You know, there was a lot of stuff going on. Oh, you know, people are saying this has cost 1.5 million. Some people are saying 2 million. Where's all this cash come from and all this? You know, people can't get a job and all this kind of stuff. But then when they saw the success of it on the streets, and once the throngs got behind it and the masses were all there, all of a sudden that was stopped. It was squashed very, very quickly. And so I think, really, the you know, the media needs to take responsibility for some of that. But certainly I do think that there's a certain air of optimism in the city. Certainly, you know we've been in a lot longer than 3 years, and despite the fact we're in the middle of a recession, despite the fact that it's bleak the world wide over, and there's nothing but bad economic news and bad news in general, there seems to be a real spirit of optimism and positivity in Liverpool at the moment. And I think that has come through, you know, the politics that are there. I think it's come through bold statements like the Giants, bold statements like the GEC conference and so on. And I think, you know, we all play our roles within that. But I think Liverpool, when you look at the cocktail of offer that we've got right across, you know, the cultural sector, the life sciences sector, right across everything, really, there's a lot of great things going on. And I think people are beginning to recognise that.
And I think that, you know, it's not peculiar to Liverpool that you're going to have naysayers that sit there all the time and grumble. You know, I'm from Dundee originally, and there's plenty of people there that do the same sort of thing.
But do you have a daily newspaper that gives them that massive voice to articulate that negativity? Because I think that's the point, Dave. You know, that's the point Dave was making. I mean, just, I think it's got better, the Liverpool Echo. But they still do have that tendency. And again, I think Dave and I have discussed this before. Certainly, I've talked about it on this show. Tony Wilson, great mate of ours, used to always say to me, you know, the difference between Manchester and Liverpool is that in Manchester, if you had, you know, a granny mugged in Moss Side, but 300 jobs were created on the same day down the road in a factory, the front page story would be about the jobs. Yeah. Liverpool, we get the impression, would be the opposite. So I'm not quite sure whether, as Dave was indicating there, the media have necessarily grasped the change of mood in our city, mm-hmm. whether the media's lagged behind a little bit. And, you know, sometimes the media does follow rather than lead, and I wonder whether that's where they're at the moment.
Well, I think that, you know, I mean, I'd say it's more of a peculiarly British trait that bad news stories tend to sell more papers than good news stories. Mm-hmm. And so we always focus. We've got this great thing about building people up and then knocking people down, which is, you know, just wrong. But going back to what Dave was saying about the opportunities that Liverpool has, and one of the things that's impressed me is there are so many cities and regions around the country that will, in tough times, sit there and kind of have a woe is me attitude, you know, what are we going to do now? Whereas here in Liverpool, what I see is local authorities that are determined to change things and determined to drive things forward. The key in that, though, has to be delivery. It's not enough just to have the ideas. You know, you can have as many ideas as you like. That's not going to create the jobs and create the economy that is going to be successful going forwards. The key has to be focus on delivery within those individual areas that they've identified.
And I think Joe Anderson, in his 2 years as leader of the council at least, has proved that he can deliver. You know, there is certain things that he's raised that people have sort of thought, well, really, can we achieve that? Mm-hmm. And he's delivered. GEC, one of them, the Shanghai Expo, was a real success. Mm-hmm. The embassy in London, I think, surprised people in terms of the way he went for that aggressively, despite the cuts that were imposed. So an awful lot of things that have happened that actually big tick in the box. He needs to build on that momentum, though, Dave, now, doesn't he? I think he will, though.
I mean, you know, without turning it into the Joe Anderson show, really, you know, but he does roll his sleeves up and get things done. You know, he's a doer, Joe. You know, he's one of them people that if he says he's going to do something, he'll make a damn good job at doing it, really. You know, and I think, you know, what other city could brag about the three or four things we just bragged about just now, absolutely, really? We used to feel like we were poor relations to, you know, them lost at the end, the other end, M62 there. But I think, you know, even they're now looking at us and thinking, good God, look at the stuff that we're doing right across the spectrum, really, in terms of the offer that we've got, really. And I think people are beginning to look at Liverpool as an example of the way to do things. And I think, you know, lead by example. I don't think you can judge Joe Anderson. Has played a big part in taking us there.
But you make a very good point there, which is that people used to see it as poor relations to Manchester. What I sense in the city now is, if the city's got one thing, it's ambition, and that's key, and that's something that is not seen very often in cities, and by which I mean true ambition and determination to deliver. And one of the things that comes across is that ambition is focused upon being the best they can be in a global context, not just, oh, we're going to be better than Manchester. Mm. And that's where they've got to be going forward.
Yeah, we can't benchmark ourselves against another Northwest city. In fact, there's probably more to do in terms of bringing those cities together, combining the qualities of each and moving forward on that basis. But we had Sir Howard Bernstein at an event of ours in Liverpool about 5 or 6 years back when the city wasn't quite where it's at now. Our city wasn't quite where it's at now. And I remember somebody saying to Howard, you know, has Liverpool got anything outside of the obvious, the Beatles, football, that Manchester would love to have? And he said, your waterfront.
Of course.
And for years, we have totally ignored that.
Just to hide it?
And yeah, absolutely. And all of a sudden, the activity that's taken place, almost it's become the central focal point, which is absolutely how it should be. It's what city was built on.
Architecturally, you know, you look at, and I think that's where the spirit of optimism has come in many ways. It's changed beyond belief. We bring people in for Sound City every year now, and we, you know, internationally, people who've done business with Liverpool artists, I guess, over the last 30 years, so primarily record label executives, who talk about the city just being changed beyond actual recognition, really. And I think it's true, but if you look back at those old 80s footage of before the Albert Dock was done up and so on, you know, and it was almost an embarrassment, that whole part of town, really. We didn't really look at it, and yet it was our one unique selling point in many ways, that this fantastic waterfront that we had there. You look now with the arena on there, the transformation of the docks, the transformation of the landscape, the way Liverpool One feeds all the way through to there now. It's absolutely fantastic.
And I think at long last, you know, we're treating our waterfront and the Mersey as something that looks outwards to the rest of the world rather than, as you say, being very insular about it and hiding it. And it is a fabulous asset. And as I say, delighted that we've finally started to utilise it again. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. And Dave Piccolinghi and Dr. Neil Murray will be talking some more after this.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9.
And welcome back to the show. I'm joined today in the studio by Dave Piccolinghi from South City and Dr. Neil Murray, the Chief Executive of Red X Pharma. You may wonder what that company is all about. Well, Neil's going to tell us now. Neil, I understand that you're an early stage drug development company and you're based at Merseybio.
That's right. We discover and develop new drugs, so new therapies for patients ultimately. We work across a number of areas, including cancer, antibiotics, flu, cardiovascular drugs. Based in Merseybio, we've got about 15 people there, but we've just launched a subsidiary called Red X Oncology, which is in collaboration with Cancer Research UK Centre in Liverpool, based in the Duncan Building on hospital site. And ultimately, we'll then move into the bioinnovation centre that's being built on the biocampus there.
Mm-hmm. And in the end, about 120 science-based jobs will be
within
created.
Oncology. Yeah, within oncology, there will be 127 within 2 years.
Yeah.
And then separate to that, we're continuing with plans that we have to expand the business in anti-infectives as well, and that'll hopefully create further jobs.
Yeah. Why Liverpool?
The company's been in Liverpool since its inception. So Red X was established in September 2010 to acquire a predecessor company, which was called Bradford Pharma, which, despite its name, was a Liverpool company from day one. And in fact, you know, the reason that we're here is that the guy that founded Bradford Pharma was looking for a place to put a lab and have some science done. And got speaking to Jeff Wainwright at Merseybio. And within a few days, Jeff had him in a room with all the decision makers that could help him in the city, saying, how can we help? What can we do to help you? And what support can we give you? Mm. And really, we've had that kind of relationship with the city ever since.
Yeah. I know there's been some support through the Regional Growth Fund, but also
That's right.
some private equity investment. Knowledge economy, hugely important. That Liverpool starts to create these sort of quality jobs. What is the skill base like? How do you guys and companies like you work alongside our universities and educational institutions to make sure that we've got a pipeline of people coming through from our city that can take up at least some of these positions?
Well, the critical thing in our industry is making sure that companies are properly integrated within their environment. So the historic model of biotech in the UK was find a scientist from Oxford, Cambridge, Imperial, UCL or King's, give them some money, stick them in a building in Oxford or Cambridge, and then watch them fail, which they did most of the time. Now, they did that for two reasons primarily. One was because it's research and development, and technologies fail in research and development. That's why it's called research and development. And that's not necessarily their fault. The second is because they'd be academic scientists and not experienced at building or running businesses, and so would make the mistakes that comes with that, which again is not their fault because they're being put in a position where, you know, they're outside of their skill base. What we need to be doing with biotech, though, is creating companies that fit much more closely within their environment, both with academic science, with the education sector, with the clinical side as well. So we work very closely with Royal Liverpool Hospital and the Cancer Research UK people. But all of it supported by, if you like, wrapped around by a kind of local authority infrastructure, by which I don't necessarily mean bricks and mortar. I mean the soft things that we need to have a company successful in a city like Liverpool. So we're talking about creating 127 jobs in 2 years. If we're lucky, 15% of those people that we need will already be here in the city and the city region. We're going to have to attract the others from outside to come into the city to fill those jobs with their families. And that's just the reality of the situation as we sit here today. in order to do that, the job in itself is not enough. Even in this economy, the job's not enough. They've got to want to come here because they feel safe, because there are, you know, there's a good opportunity of or a good palette of social things for them to interact with, whether it's the shopping or whether it's festivals or whatever it might be. And that they've got the right standards of education in the city, that their kids are going to get well educated, and all of these kind of things. And they're the remit of the local authority that have to pull that together. But one of the things that we are extremely keen on is the University Technical College for Life Sciences at North Liverpool Academy, Kay Askew and her team, where they're plugging a skills gap. And Dave and I were talking about this earlier, that there is a big gap around vocationally trained people in life sciences. We got lots of graduates. We got more graduates than we know what to do with. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't need good graduates going forwards. Of course we do. But we've got a big gap in terms of vocationally trained technicians to work in laboratories in the industry. And the UTC is aimed at plugging that gap, and we're big supporters of that going forwards.
Mm. And there is a massive bridge to be built, isn't there, in terms of people who are taught to academically succeed, but then failing really to prepare people for the world of work.
Absolutely.
And that's where businesses always complain.
Absolutely right. And you know, one of my great bugbears has been the demise of vocational training in the UK over the last, whatever it is, 30, 40 years. And it's something that we need to get back to. You know, you don't need to have a degree to be successful. And just because you've got a degree doesn't mean you're going to be successful. It's not right to kind of force everybody down an academic line. If somebody is skilled at whatever the vocational career might be, they should have the opportunity to be rewarded in exactly the same way. And, you know, most of them achieve that. How many poor plumbers do you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, there is nothing wrong with vocational training, and we need to be doing more of it in this country.
Mm. Dave, I know, you know, education is something that exercises your mind as well, and you get involved in terms of the educational institutions in this city and beyond, in terms of encouraging kids to get involved in the music industry. Again, do you think we're starting to get the balance right again now in terms of that vocational versus academic, if I can put it that way?
I think so. I mean, there's a lot of similarities in what I've just been listening to then in terms of certainly our core value systems and really the way we see our industry going really as well. You know, I think the perception was, you know, with anything until recently that you know, you needed a degree or some kind of a piece of paper to get anywhere in life. I think with the advent of technology, as much as anything else, that's changed that. You know, if I use the music business as a parallel, you know, we run a lot of education programs now with a lot of young kids coming through. We're really, really keen. You know, we were talking before, we have 12 full-time people now working at Sound City. By the time the festival comes on in Liverpool, we'll have about 100-150 working as volunteers on the programme. Four of our full-time employees have come through that volunteer programme, really. So people who get it, and they're not necessarily degree people, because sometimes when people have done degrees, they can do it on paper, but then when it comes to event management, you know, they burn out, or they just don't get it, really, beyond the classroom environment. So I think that's definitely something that we embrace. I think beyond that, particularly with the music business and talking about the technology thing again, there's no hierarchy anymore. You know, there used to be, I'm not talking about bureaucracies in that sense, but in the way that there was a certain route to a job. So, you know, my background first and foremost was the record business. And, you know, you started making tea, you know, you worked your way up through junior A&R, you worked your way up to so on and so forth. You know, there was a route to getting the position that you were aiming at, and that was usually attained at around about mid-30s, whatever, 40, whatever it might be. Now, if you've got a great idea and you can find some way to kind of develop that idea, you know, the R&D thing that we're talking about before, and you can get that to market and it works, then, you know, the these kids are tearing the rule books up. With Sound City, we used to, in the city, with the late, great Tony Wilson, who said a great old friend, in the city, when we used to do that in Manchester, we used to have all the people that were in the music business in one side of the room, and the kids, so to speak, we used to put them in a separate building. You know, because the perception was, you can't put the kids near the people who, you know, the professionals, really. Now, we just have everyone in the throng together, because the professionals want to be by the kids, because it's usually the kids that are leading them through the way, really, and finding the way that might define the way the modern music business is shaped, like, you know. So certainly I think, you know, technology's played its part, and I think beyond that, you know, some of the greatest people that we want to work with, and I really love them, the vocational ways, because if you've got that burning desire, you know, from Scousers or whatever it might be, they're often the best people.
I think another thing that happened was, over the past 5 or 6 years in particular, an awful lot of businesses have actually put their hands up and said, you know, we're getting graduates through, but they are not fit for work. You know, they simply cannot apply the academic study into a work environment. And I've seen it myself. You know, I've employed people who've got degrees coming out their ears, mm-hmm. but they haven't got an ounce of common sense. And I'm afraid in a business, you haven't got really enough to a small business time to develop them into that. You know, some of them get it eventually after 5-6 months. But beyond that, you know, you just, as I say, as a small enterprise, it's difficult to continue to have the patience to develop them. And that's what we've got to start to do in our educational institutions.
But part of the problem that we've certainly got in our industry has been the dilution of content in science education. You know, when I think of what I was allowed to do as a kid in school in terms of the experiments that we were allowed to do in chemistry or whatever the science might be, you know, whereas now they're lucky if they see a video of that. You know, and I never set fire to any sinks. but now, you know,
that
lucky
old
if
thing
they get
health
to see
and
a video.
Safety.
Yeah, exactly. And of course the natural consequence of that is it feeds through right the way through their education. So they come out less skilled at working in a laboratory, and they might be able to write down a mechanism for some fancy reaction, but actually doing that reaction in a lab is you know,
the practical,
more difficult for them.
The practical skill base. Just one final point I want to ask you about, Neil, if I may, before we go to a break. You mentioned there that you're working with the Royal, obviously, and Cancer Research UK. What do you think the health economy looks like in the city region? Because again, I have to say, you know, a big criticism of ours is always around too many local authorities. Isn't the health economy just too big? And whether you agree with the NHS reforms or not, isn't it daft that we've got about 99 hospitals, community health, we've got PCTs coming out of our... What, you know, how are people supposed to understand it? And surely there's a less bureaucratic, easier way to manage the health economy of Merseyside.
I think there is certainly reform needed in the health service, and you know, time will tell whether the current reforms are the right reforms or not. The big difficulty with the health service is that sick people want to get better, and particularly now with their access to knowledge through the internet, you know, how many people, when they get ill, the first thing they do is look up their symptoms or their condition on the computer, and then they go and tell their doctor what's wrong with them, rather than relying on their doctor to diagnose it and give them an appropriate course of treatment. And that's a huge challenge for the health service. When you add that to the growing complexity of drug science, and the difficulties that there are and the costs that are associated with bringing new drugs through, all patients want the latest and greatest drugs because they want the best cure for them. And that's understandable. You know, it's only natural. The difficulty with that for any health service that's based on the principles that the NHS is there's a cost that goes with that. And giving patients access to that kind of care is a real challenge. But I think you're right. There is an opportunity to streamline health services. There is, there's no question that there is a lot of wastage within the NHS that could be better managed. But it's the proverbial elephant sandwich. I mean, it's a huge problem to deal with. Mm. Foundation trusts may be a step in the right direction, and I really hope that they are.
Mm. And affordability is, at the end of the day, where all governments and politicians are coming from in these things. I just think that, and this isn't a party political point, because I think it could be said of the last administration as well, they actually miss the big opportunities and they go after the wrong things. And as I say, I think the bureaucracy that exists within Merseyside, which is replicated right across the country, it's no different here than anywhere else, That really were massive savings could be made without actually an impact on the patient, which is what we should be looking to do. But anyway, I'll get off my soapbox because it's time for another break. Stay with us. We'll be back talking Sound City and maybe a word or two about Roy Hodgson.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9.
Welcome back to the final part of the programme. I'm joined today by Dave Piccolinghi from Sound City and Dr. Neil Murray, the Chief Executive of Redx Pharma. Dave, I want to turn to our visitor economy. It was announced this week, figures showing that Liverpool, outside of London and Edinburgh, is the most visited city in the UK, which is fantastic news. And adding to our mix of fabulous things that we offer is Sound City. So what's going on this year? Because I know it's a rolling festival, this. Every year you come up with some great things for us.
Yeah, I think we try to organically grow the thing every year. I mean, that's interesting about the figures. Does that include the Giants?
No, that's before the Giants, I'm told. Good Lord. which is an incredible stat.
It is, yeah. So we'll be up there with Edinburgh
We can't be far off, can we, really?
I hope Sound City kind of certainly adds to that statistic. I think certainly every year we try to organically and naturally grow the offer. The reason for that is because, you know, there are only so many of us live here, so we've got to give people more reasons to come here, I guess. And so as well as this year, we've got over 350 bands coming in from 23 different countries. We'll have an audience of about, you know, 35,000 people with our full wristband models. About 3,500 people attending our business conference, again, from all over the world, from all areas of the music and digital technology economy. And for the first year this year, we've taken on that big building on the waterfront, the Echo Arena, which is kind of, I guess, is our boldest statement to date, really. So we've got that for 3 days this year. On the first day of Sound City, on the 17th of May, we're welcoming BBC introduced into the city, with an organisation called Access to Music, who work with young people in training young people to work, or, you know, for employment, gainful employment within the music business economy. And that's part of our ongoing training programmes as well that we're about to launch at Sound City this year. But we'll be launching a thing called the UK Music Student Awards, which will be recognising the great and the good, really, like a kind of MTV awards ceremony, but for young people. Who are either working in the business or making music within the business. And that'll be hosted by Edith Bowman from Radio 1, and it'll be headlined by Professor Green. So he'll be headlining that show that night and also presenting a couple of the awards at the event. We've got a special award at that, the Joseph Lappin Award, that we've done through Joe and Liverpool City Council, really. And that award will go to someone who's achieved great things from the Liverpool City region as well. And then the following 2 days in the Echo Arena, we're doing a thing called Sound City Expo, which, to all intents and purposes, will be an international expo where we're bringing in over 70 companies from all over the world to exhibit their hardware, be it drum kits, guitars, new technology, whatever it might be. But then also there'll be a kind of digital innovation hub where we're going to have everything from Open Labs from Liverpool University and Opposing and a number of other great companies from the city, just showing the great things that we're either inventing here or new ideas that are coming out, again, of the city region. And it's an opportunity for them to show that to a world-class business audiences, for receptive people that's coming in from all over the place. And then, as usual, it'll be business as usual in the Hilton Hotel for 2 days of discussion, debates around the modern music business. And again, another thing that we launched in another event we did in New York earlier this year, the roundtable sessions, which will be a room full of individuals and businesses and the opportunity to discuss and debate different topics to do with the music business, but at the same time, get to know people around the table and an opportunity for some informal networking to sell their ideas and to hopefully create some meaningful business exchanges.
Mm. There's some tremendous creative businesses in the city at the moment. I suppose there always has been. But going back to the earlier parts of the programme when we were talking about that thing, confidence, we appear to be either getting smarter or perhaps becoming more confident in shouting about what our offer is again.
I think it's both those things, really. And I think certainly that there is an air of confidence about it. We're you know, like of the list of companies that come through, the ones that are really, really doing well at the moment. I mean, I use one example as a company called Centric Music that was created, and it's an online publishing company. Spotted a real niche in the market of what you might call the nickel and cent part of the market, really, where it's really about volume of unsigned acts and so on, and getting bands to register their intellectual property very, very early on, which bands don't normally consider that till they've got some kind of a record deal or a professional publishing contract. Run by a group of people, I'm looking to call them kids, but you know, started it when they were 19, 20 and are probably about 23, 24 now, and are absolutely flying. And they're typical of a lot of the businesses that we're seeing coming through within that zone, really. They're run by young, confident, dynamic individuals or groups of individuals, really. And they do rip the rule book up and just kind of go at it, really. I think the other thing that needs to be said is that what we're finding as well is, and I think Sound City's played its part in that, giving people the belief they can do it in Liverpool, that they don't have to go to London actually anymore. We're 2 hours away on a train. We're nanoseconds away with the technology that we use. So there's actually no reason for you to go down to this kind of mythical place called London to make it anymore, you know, where the streets are paved with gold. Mm. Liverpool, as we said, has got this spirit of optimism. It's a city that's kind of... Music is in our blood. Music culture is in our blood, amongst all the other great things that we know we're getting better at shouting about. But certainly music and culture is in our blood. In the past, people thought once you'd made it, you had to go to London. And now they don't believe that. I think people having this spirit of optimism and spirit of self-belief that they can actually do it in their own backyards.
Yeah. Talking of mythical cities, we've mentioned New York. I've just got back from New York. First time I've visited. Absolutely amazing.
It's the first time you've been.
I know, incredible. I'm surprised.
Yeah.
But then I'm only 25, Dave. I've just had a hard life. but an amazing city. But we were saying off air, you know, one of the things that often drives me mad is the Beatles. Beatles. Everywhere you go in New York, there's posters of them, you know, as soon as you say you're from Liverpool, the Beatles, it's the first thing. And as much as it might drive us mad, it's a fantastic phenomena to be able to actually say on that international stage in the most exciting city in the world, the first group that they will talk about as far as pop music is concerned is a Liverpool group.
No, it's true. And I think, and the weird thing is, it doesn't matter how old those people are either, really. They transcend, really, you know. Yeah. There's people, very, very young people, as well as people my mum and dad's age, that are into the Beatles, really. They're a great door opener, aren't they? You know,
yeah,
they're certainly a great door opener. We launched New York Sound City there in March. It was actually on the same time as the GEC conference over here. And you know, our first event sold out over there. We sold out all our live events. We sold out our conference there. To do that in the first year in what is a massive city like New York, we were really proud and
did the Liverpool connection help there, Dave?
Absolutely. You know, like I said, it's a door opener. And I think Liverpool, certainly when you mention Liverpool, they kind of think, yeah, okay, we already get this. There's already an understanding. Now, this is not an attack against any other cities, but I suspect if we'd have gone and said, look, we run Norwich Sound City, I think they might have looked at us and went, oh, well, hang on, like, you know, where's Norwich for the kickoff? Like, you know. You know, so I think as an attack brand, Liverpool is, you know, it does open those doors. And certainly it goes back to the Beatles. It goes back to a number of other things, you know, music, football, all those things over the years, really. But it certainly gets people's attention. I think beyond that, you've got to deliver. I think, but what's great is that the talent, you know, we showcase whenever we go to any of these events around the world, we're always showcasing the best of our business talent and the best of our musical talent when we go there. So we only get to do one event, because if that's awful, we don't get invited back to do a second one. But every time we've gone in, the breadth and the depth of the talent that we're taking out there means that we can continue to do these things year after year.
The thing that I was told before I went to New York and proved to be absolutely right is there is probably also no other city in the world that's as similar to Liverpool in terms of its attitude and in terms of the way people are, you know, so very loud, very brash, but very, very friendly, but extremely complimentary about Liverpool. people who probably never visited the place, but just the stories they've heard, the music, even some of them able to talk about football. Although I did
more
have to
more and more, actually. Yeah,
I did have to laugh at that one guy in Carnegie's Deli. What a place that is, by the way. Who said to me, "Ah, Liverpool football, Torres."
Oh, yeah.
So you're a little bit behind.
But you know what? They just there's a great Liverpool football club supporters club on the Lower East Side that we always go and watch the match. Like, and because we've been there so often now, the last, I guess, many years ago and over there, and it's grown and grown. There's a few guys that we know, and you think they're just about getting it. And then I was in there a few weeks ago when last we were over there, and someone turned to say something to his mate, and they're just about to kick off, and he looked at me and goes, "Hey, who won the toss?" I'm thinking, I've never heard that question asked in any boozer or anywhere back home. Like, you know, who cares who won the toss? Like, you know, only an American would even want to know that statistic. Like, you know, already we're one up, like we won the toss. And thinking, what a bizarre question to ask.
Well, they'd have the staff for that one,
no, exactly, yeah.
If they got right into it. Listen, just on football, it was announced this week, former Liverpool manager Roy Hodgson announced as the new England coach. Neil, as a Scot, do you think that's good news for you, or do you think actually we might be being a bit too harsh on Mr. Hodgson?
I think we need a bit more help than a different England manager as a Scot myself. But I personally think that he's a very good manager. I also personally think he was harshly treated when he was here as an outsider looking in. So, you know, time will tell. You know, the big problem with England managers, and frankly it's the same with Scotland managers as well, is that the media never gives them an opportunity to really succeed in the best possible way, because the expectation's too high, although not so much in Scotland. We've got pretty low expectations of our national team, but you know, the expectation's too high. And it was interesting, I heard Graham Taylor on the radio yesterday saying that people should be judging him on how many semi-finals England get to, not how many things England win. He said, because realistically, if you look at England's performance historically, he said, the only thing we've won is the World Cup in 66. Although as a Scot, I've blanked that out of my memory. and he said, you know, if you look at our average performance and things, then aspiration for us is getting to semi-finals, not winning things. Mm. And that's the kind of benchmark that we should be judging against. Of course, it doesn't mean you don't try and win, but, you know, be realistic about what can be achieved. Mm.
Dave, were you pleased with the announcement? I thought Harry Redknapp was a nail on.
I think everyone did, didn't he? That it came as quite a surprise, really, you know. I think I'd start by saying I'm not really bothered. You know, I think we care more about our club than England, yeah. Really. So it kind of just made my, you know, my top lip curled a little bit when I heard. But I thought it kind of makes sense. It's only when you drill into it a bit, because I didn't really know, even when he was here, really, I wasn't aware of his history beyond the recent Fulham history, really, and what he did at Fulham. I wasn't aware that he'd played or been a manager of so many international games. Yeah, I didn't know he used to manage Switzerland, which came as quite a surprise to me. I didn't know the guy spoke seven languages. It's, you know, there's a lot. It seems like there's a lot to him that we don't know, really. And I think, as you said, it seems like we focus on the way he talks more than anything else, really. And he comes across as a bit dopey. Mm. I mean, that's his thing, I think. That he comes across as slightly dopey at times, and so I think that's you know, the media leap onto that, that's the perception. And I think you're right, he did get fair, you know, even as a Liverpool fan, really, I think looking at that, he was a little unfairly treated. If you look at Dalglish's league record against his, it's, you know, it's comparable, shall we say, really, yeah. You know, yet it's Dalglish, so we kind of forgive him to some extent.
Yeah. But clubs like Liverpool, Chelsea, Man United, City, they need personalities as managers now, don't they?
Absolutely.
And I'm not, I actually think the England manager's role in many ways is less challenging than managing a club like Liverpool, because you talk about expectations. You know, Liverpool supporters, because of the history, do think, well, we should just be qualifying for the Champions League. And even, you know, depending on what happened yesterday, you know, if the cup wasn't won yesterday, even a legend like Kenny Dalglish is going to be under some pressure. But yeah. We're going to have to wait and see what Roy Hodgson does. He's said, quite realistically, I think, you know, if we get to the quarterfinals in the Euro Championships, we'll have done all right, and certainly we'll have done better than Scotland. Anyway, that's it for me, Frank McKenna and City Talk Business for another Sunday. Thanks to my guests, thanks to my producer, Jonathan Dean. Happy birthday to my gorgeous wife, Victoria. Most of all, thank you for listening. Have a great week and don't do anything I wouldn't do.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9. Listen and log on to great music and great conversation on City Talk 105.9.